Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Today, I am absolutely thrilled to announce that the Commanders are ready to make the single, and our partners are committed to make the single largest private investment in DC history.
Josh Harris, as it was announced this week, that the Commanders in DC have a deal in place to move back to the nation's capital once and for all, coming home to RFK 2.0. Now, they just need some votes, and they need the DC City Council to help them do it. And we're sitting in Ward 2. As we get ready at Capital One Arena for a massive Caps game tonight. If they win, they clinch, and they move on. So who better to talk to than the D.C. City Council member from Ward 2 representing this ward, Brooke Pinto, who is with us. Thank you so much for the time and for coming and joining us in person. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely. My pleasure to be here with you, and I'm so happy we're doing this in Capital One Arena. I can't wait to cheer on the Caps tonight at their playoffs.
You said you're going to the game. They get a win. They move on for the first time since 2018 when they won the Cup. So you'll be rocking the red this evening. Do you get to a lot of games here?
I do. And, you know, it's really never been a better time to be a sports fan in the District of Columbia. So we're so proud of our teams and how they've been just really blowing out all of their records. I was here to celebrate Ovechkin's goal score record a few weeks ago, and it's really emblematic of how much pride there is for sports and for this type of success in our city.
No, it's for sure. It's an exciting time. So let me ask you this about the stadium deal, okay? What are people getting wrong when they're sharing their misgivings or issues they may have or things that are coming up? And you guys are going to hash this out, as you should, as a council. What are people saying that you've heard that you go, you know what, that's not right?
Sure. So let me zoom out for your listeners to understand how this process kind of works. So it's very common for the mayor, who's our executive in DC, to execute agreements, to have her deals team negotiate, be the principal negotiator with the team on what this type of deal will look like. That deal is now part of the mayor's fiscal year 2026 budget proposal, which will be sent to the council. And then we analyze it. We look at all the terms of the deal. We make sure it's a fair deal for the district, that our priorities are being accommodated. And then we pass it, hopefully, as part of the budget. This process did not start on Monday when Mayor Bowser made this amazing announcement with Josh Harris and Robert Dell. I was so thrilled to be in the room, and you could really feel the energy. But this has been ongoing conversations for years and years, where we've had the opportunity to hear from the community about what they want to see with housing, retail, access to green space for our kids and families. All of that is incorporated in this deal. Conversations that I've had with the team about the importance to me of including job access to our returning citizens. This offering is going to have 2,000 job opportunities. So a lot of that input has been incorporated. And so I'm thrilled about the deal. And now it continues through the legislative process, which will be finished with mid-July.
Yeah, and those 2,000 jobs are permanent, 16,000 total when you account for, obviously, the construction jobs, right? 14,000 of those. So it's interesting to hear you say that, because we had the chairman, Phil Mendelson, on a couple days ago, and his number one gripe, he didn't come out and say this, although he kind of did, was it just seemed like he was upset that he wasn't included more. And that was like his whole annoyance in all of this. So your point is it's actually semi-common that he or you guys wouldn't be that included until this point.
Right. The mayor executes deals and is the initial proposer of the budget. That's how the budget process works every year. This has been a topic of interest to me, so I have involved myself. But it's very common that the mayor is the principal negotiator for these things. And then we take a look at the deeper details and make sure that every council member has an opportunity to review it thoroughly. I've reviewed the term sheet very thoroughly, and we'll be having hearings on it, hearing from the public, and hopefully get this deal accomplished.
So, Councilmember, and again, Grant has mentioned this, we spoke to Phil Mendelson, we spoke to Charles Allen, both very gracious with their time and forthcoming with their views on it. And their objection centers around the upfront cost to the taxpayer and to the city. And then will we be making that return on investment? What would you say to those that are skeptical about that or critical, or AKA people maybe on the other side right now?
This site of 180 acres of land has been sitting vacant for decades. This is the surest and fastest way to make productive use in an extremely exciting way, but also a successful way for our city to bring the Commanders home. We're thrilled to do so, but also to build 6,000 units of housing, a third of which will be affordable, to build hotels, retail. We're going to have a sports complex for our kids so people don't have to take their families and their kids to play an hour or two away, as I speak to families about all the time. So there's so many community benefits as part of this deal that is an extremely important investment for the city that residents have been calling for. This has been sitting vacant. I have not seen another offer on the table or another deal on the table that would be a better use of this land. And so I think it's time that we move forward with the single largest private investment in our city's history.
What about those that are holding out for that golden goose, that mythical deal supposedly that is coming? I don't know where from or who from or et cetera. But I think one of your colleagues, Councilmember Nadeau, in her statement that she issued was saying we could do something better. I'd love to hear what, when, why, where, and how. But what would you say to those folks?
I would say it's been 35 years and it hasn't come. This is the best deal that has ever come to us. This is a good deal for district residents, for visitors, not just sports fans, although it is fantastically exciting for that. But it accomplishes so many of our goals. Look, one or two council members have said that they don't support this deal. You know, I think the vast majority of us are really excited. We understand how important this is going to be for our city, how galvanizing it will be for our city spirit to accept our residents and visitors from around the country and world to come to this site. There's no other stadium in the country where you can look out and see the water, see the National Monument, and really be part of the history of RFK and the nation's capital.
So, and I mean this when I say that I enjoyed our conversations with Alan and with Mendelson, but neither of them were able to answer this question. And it sounds like you're saying what I'm saying, which is I have not heard a better alternative to generate growth, jobs, and tax revenue at that site. And if they have one, I'm all ears. But there isn't one. And I'm still waiting. And I guess if you have a thought on that, I let me know. But what else are you going to do that generates more in those three capacities?
I share your view. I have not heard a better alternative. But the last several years, what I have heard is when I've spoken to communities about this all across the city, I've said, what if we could build a stadium, but also build housing and retail and hotels and green space? And you know what so many people said to me? That would be ideal, but that's not possible. They'll never make that happen. It's happening. It's all in the term sheet. This is what people have been calling for. And so this idea that we're going to, you know, turn our back on the opportunity for the largest economic development opportunity in our history is short-sighted, and I don't think is where we should be headed.
Ward 2 Councilmember Brooke Pinto with us here on Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. So I have my own little back of the napkin math here. So far, I'm thinking we have four yeses. I've got you on that list. I don't know anyone other than McDuffie, but you, Felder, Bonds, and McDuffie were all at the event. Do you know that all of them would say yes? Or you don't want to speak for them, I don't know. But they were all at the event. So I got those four yeses. I've got two no's. Nadeau, I'm calling. I don't know her name, but I'm saying Nadeau. Nadeau, I think. And then Alan are no's. And then we have six maybes that we're still waiting on. We've been told by Mendelson there's not enough support. There's not seven yeses. Do you agree with that?
No, I don't. A couple things on this. So this is not a new bill or new law that we need to have seven votes to pass. This is part of the mayor's budget proposal. So this needs to be referred to the Committee on Business and Economic Development Committee, which is chaired by Councilmember McDuffie. All four of those council members who you mentioned who were at the announcement on Monday serve on the business committee.
Okay.
So we would welcome the opportunity to have public hearings on this deal in the next couple of weeks, have a roundtable on it, dive into the details, hear from the public, move forward a committee report that's supportive of this development, and then it would go to the full council. Now, because it's part of the budget, if somebody wants to move an amendment to excise this entire deal and come up with a new proposal, that's in their right, but technically they would need 7 votes to do that.
Interesting. So then is the number 7 that is needed that we keep hearing that's not accurate then? Or
it takes 7 votes to pass the budget. And right. So in theory, if you're voting for the budget, which includes this deal, you would be
that's
supporting the
entire
deal.
Budget. The deal is just one of the hundreds of
elements of the budget.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We've got a $20 billion budget. So everything in there from our school funding to our police, to our libraries, public services. So it would be unusual to just vote against one component.
Sorry, Dan, I want to follow up on that real quick. Because Alan and I had asked him this question. He said it all kind of comes from the same pot. My understanding was there's like different areas of the budget where things come from. And this is like the building part of it. This isn't pencils for kids. Is it all kind of from the same funnel? And best I could tell, it's 7% of your overall budget that we're talking about in terms of the money you guys would spend on the stadium.
So there are a number of different avenues where our money comes from. The easiest way to think about it is there's operating costs and there's capital costs. Operating are things like city services, and capital are like our buildings and our schools. The thing that makes this deal so unique is that part of the public financing component is preparing the land kind of horizontally to make sure that it is ready to be built upon. We're not spending public dollars on actually building the stadium. That's coming from the team. But it is being the private investment component is being reinvested into part of the development for RFK. We're also going to be using part of the funds generated from sales tax and parking fees to then pay for the city's portion of the contribution. So no, I don't think it's accurate to say we're taking from another capital cost, because many of the investments are coming from future generated dollars from this site.
Councilmember Brooke Pinto with us here on Grant and Danny. So just want to give you a chance to answer some of these things that critics might say. Sometimes when you hear these economic impact studies, people kind of roll their eyes because it's, you know, sort of columns being rearranged. A lot of times you'll see this could generate $1 billion. Well, what's the net profit? What's the takeaway? What would you say to some of those folks that are dubious maybe about some of the claims and the revenue that might be generated by an NFL stadium?
Sure. So I have looked at study after study. I've looked at other stadium deals around the country. The district public financing component of this deal is about 24%. There are other stadiums like New Orleans that the public financing component is over 60%. So on a comparative basis, this is actually quite low. The average is around 50%. So that's one marker that I look at. I also look at how much revenue that we're going to generate, which we estimate to be about $4 billion, which comes out to about 20% of our whole budget, which is why investment in the future of our city is so important. We cannot continue spending at current levels without investing in our growth and investing in our future. And when we think about sports in particular, it builds so much enthusiasm. People visit the city for it, just like I did to Philadelphia to go to the NFC Conference Championship game. People will come here for these games. They'll buy concessions. They'll pay for parking. They may go to a restaurant while they're here. They may stay at a hotel while they're here. They may visit our free museums and our monuments. And all of that economic activity is so important, not just for the dollars and cents, which I do think are there, but it's also important for our city spirit. And good news begets good news. We'll have more businesses opening and really revitalizing this entire area, which has sat vacant for 30 years.
You mentioned parking. That was another sticking point, it sounded like, for a couple of your colleagues. I didn't think of it this way, because we're used to these suburban stadiums with tens of thousands of parking spots, and we go, oh, only 8,000. That's not that many for tailgaters. And Charles Allen said, 8,000 is way too many. Nats Park has 1,200. I would quibble with that number because there's more surrounding kind of
Darris,
in the city.
If you can find the clip of him talking about how he also said that while you guys would own the parking garages, they would get all the revenue from them.
And that's what I was going to ask you about. So that 8,000 number, is that sit right with you? And then, you know, the way that he described where that revenue would go from parking would go to the team. Just want your reaction to that.
So the parking financing is a little bit complicated in that in several years from now, there will be parking generated dollars that do go to the team. And that's part of how we make sure that the team's contribution is as large as it is now, because they are also taking a risk on us.
Saying, sure, yeah.
We're making this huge investment. And so that was, as opposed to offering more money at the front end from the city's perspective, we were able to be creative in the parking on 4 years from now. In terms of the number of spots, you know, tailgating is a big part of the fan experience for so many of our fans. We want to make sure that people who want to or need to drive to and from the games can. We want to make sure it's much better than the FedEx experience. If any of you have been out to that field, you know, and you get off the metro or you drive there and park, you're walking a mile. And it becomes a very onerous process for many. We also want to make sure to note that we have other public access points to this site. We have metro, we have bus. It's in the middle of a wonderful residential community where people will be walking. And so parking is an important part of the mix. It has to be included. That's what we need in any football stadium. It's certainly something we'll take a look at to see if that's the exact right number for what they're estimating from their fan base, but it's got to be part of the deal.
So in terms of generating revenue, it would seem to me like an arena like this one, the number of people here from Virginia tonight, from Maryland tonight, massive, right? And those people are spending their money here, whereas if you guys almost, maybe you would say it wasn't almost, but lost the teams to Virginia, all that money goes away. And all the shoulder restaurants here, and everybody pays for that. And I think about that in the other neighborhood as well, with what could be, you know, around that area. If you don't do the stadium, let's just say, let's say it doesn't pass and it falls by the wayside. How do you get, to quote my buddy Barry Sfaluga in the Washington Post today, JP from Maryland in Branton, Virginia.
Who was he talking about?
Yeah, I don't know. But he said, you know, oh, well, you know, respectfully to those guys, they don't pay it. So, they you know, their opinion doesn't matter. I'm not going to D.C. if I'm not going to the games anymore. I got good restaurants in Virginia. I work in D.C. and I do pay taxes there because we're at the Navy Yard. But what do they build that brings us there? And without the sports teams, I think the math changes a whole lot from people coming across the river.
I think the biggest thing I could say to that is look at what's happened, or rather what has not happened in the last 30 years. If anyone can point to a developer who said, I want to build all of these things, let us do it. I haven't spoken to one. The stadium is catalytic. It is an important part of this investment to reactivate this space. And it's a big draw for the other businesses who are going to open on the other parcels of land, be it retail, 6,000 units of housing, new hotels. So all of those businesses will be able to thrive, generating even more tax dollars for the city. And I do agree, we did almost lose the team. And I take that lesson very seriously to make sure that that never happens again. The city's spirit was totally deflated, even in thinking that we may lose the team.
I was surprised, honestly, how quickly it shifted. And do you think that whether it was you guys or the mayor, like, who screwed up, or how did that happen in your opinion? And then you guys were able to get him back, so it doesn't matter now. But if you think it almost happened, like, how close was it?
I think that we cannot take for granted our businesses in the city of any size, our small businesses that make up so much character of our community, and our large businesses that generate our sports teams and these great fan experiences. And so I will not be doing that again. And I think as a city, we have to really take ownership of our responsibility to make sure that we recognize how important our business success is to the entirety of our city.
One more for me. I want to give you, just trying to give you a chance to just to swat away all the critics here. So just trying to think of things they might say. There's so many neighborhood success stories in D.C., whether it's the Wharf or NoMa or I don't know, there are dozens of places where it's gone from what it was to something now vibrant with its own kind of, you know, you could walk a mile and be in four totally different seeming cities, which is one of the beauties of that. And that didn't include a stadium. Wouldn't that be possible if you just raised RFK and something else could go there? Just again, your chance to respond.
Sure. So the biggest difference is that RFK is almost 180 acres. Mm-hmm. We're not talking about, you know, 2 acres of land that we can revitalize, or 10 acres of land where we can have some retail. The other thing I'll say is, yes, there have been some fantastic positive development stories for other kind of mini markets throughout DC, but the finances from the developer perspective have not panned out in the way that they hoped they would, in part because we have to have diversity of uses. We cannot be overly reliant on one income stream, and that's what happens when we build only housing or only retail.
So does that mean, so let's say I'm Danny the developer, I go, I'll build these condos and I'll build this, that, and the other, and I'm not getting a return on investment that I could potentially get this way. Is that what that means?
That's right. And yeah. I think that this is the future of cities across the country, is people want a 15-minute experience. They want to be able to live close to where they work, and they can walk to entertainment. They can walk to hotel, to restaurant, to retail. They can walk to a green space to play with their kids. This is what we're building here on this site that Ward 7 deserves. Ward 7 deserves this kind of catalytic investment and focus. As my Ward 7 colleague has pointed out, Wendell Felder, who represents this area, who's mm-hmm. very supportive of the stadium, he said, look, you got this investment in Ward 2 with the Capital One Arena revitalization. Why doesn't Ward 7 deserve this investment? And I think he's absolutely right. It's time for Ward 7 to have this win and to really make sure we're building up the community in all ways we can.
What do we know about the folks in D.C. and whether they want it or not? I did see polling at one point that like 71% wanted this stadium. And I brought that up to the previous two council members, and they said, well, if we asked you if you wanted a Lamborghini, you'd say yes. Do you want to pay for the Lamborghini or whatever? I don't know what the polling was exactly, but I would say it's a pretty popular idea. But specifically around there, I was talking to someone who's from there the other night, and I was like, well, what do you think? And they're like, I'd love it. There'd be so many places for me to go shop and eat and do things that I don't have right now. Yeah. But I'm just curious what your thoughts are in that regard.
So, yes, I've seen the poll that I think said 51% of residents support this. What I know is that for the last several years, this came up in my first election in 2020. I was asked in a debate if I support the team coming back. This has been on the mind of district residents for so long. And here's what I hear. Will it have enough days of activation if there's only going to be 9 home games a year? Yes, part of the term sheet says over 200 days of activation. Okay, they say, we don't want to spend public taxpayer dollars on building a stadium. Don't worry, it's only the horizontal preparing of the land and the parks. The team is building the stadium. Okay, they say, what about housing? We're building 6,000 units of housing, including a third of which will be affordable. They say, we wanted to have not touch the fields at RFK. That's included in the term sheet. They will be untouched. So almost every component that I've heard from the community of saying we would support it, but is included in this deal. And I'm not shy about saying, yes, of course, we're going to go through the legislative process. We're going to have public hearings. I want to engage with the public. I want to continue engaging with the mayor and the team ownership and leadership about ensuring all these community benefits are maintained. But I'm very confident to say this is a great deal for the city. This is what our city needs right now. And it's going to pay off, not just in our enthusiasm and our spirit, but in our investments that we see benefit district residents for decades to come.
And you're pretty confident it gets done.
I think we've got to get this done. I think this is the single best economic development deal opportunity on the table for our city, and we can't pass it up.
Brooke Pinto, Ward 2 council member, joining us here on Grant and Danny. Well, unlike the last couple of days, I found someone on my team. So this was probably the easiest interview you'll do in a while, but we try to present both sides here and ask all the questions it needed to be. But let's get it done. Let's get a stadium in D.C.
Let's do it.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
So, council member with us here on Grant and Danny. We're at Capital One Arena in Ward 2, which is the ward that she represents. Tariq El-Bashir joins us to preview the Caps and the Canadians next.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
If you're a parent or share a fridge with someone, Instacart is about to make grocery shopping so much easier. Because with family carts, you can share a cart with your partner and each add the items you want. Since between the two of you, odds are you'll both remember everything you need. And this way, you'll never have to eat milkless cereal again. So minimize the stress of the weekly shop with family carts. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three orders. Service fees apply for three orders in 14 days. Excludes restaurants. It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Visit DollarShaveClub.com and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more.
Hey everyone, summer is just around the corner and May's packed with reasons to celebrate. Whether you're firing up the grill for a backyard barbecue, soaking up the sun by the pool, or enjoying a long weekend with friends and family, Whole Foods Market makes it easy to kick off the season with great everyday prices on high quality favorites, from fresh produce to grilling essentials. Let's dive into the savings and get your summer fun started right. Personally, I love how easy Whole Foods Market makes it to pull together a last-minute gathering. I was there recently picking up a few things for a cookout, and those yellow low-price signs are no joke. I grabbed their No Antibiotics Ever Ground Turkey and a few 365 by Whole Foods Market Organic Salad Kits. Honestly, so convenient and surprisingly affordable. The quality is still everything you'd expect, but I definitely felt like I was scoring a deal, which I love. Plus those yellow sale signs, I make a beeline for them now. Especially when I saw strawberries on sale, we went through two cartons in one day. Save on May celebrations with great everyday prices at Whole Foods Market.
Danny looks frozen even when he's not frozen.
He's very frozen. He's frozen because he's at the game. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on the Fan with our buddy Tariq El-Bashir of Monumental Sports. You check us out, as Tariq's telling you, on the 106.7 The Fan YouTube page. Of course, you're listening all over the DMV on the flagship 106.7 and on the Odyssey app. It's good to bring Go Caps Go back from the dead. Our buddy Keith Elgin recorded that years and years ago, and I asked Aris to find it. And Danny immediately got upset.
Yeah, this is not to besmirch Keith Elgin, who is incredibly talented and can make music. Like, I am jealous of that. This is to object to the losing association of the Caps losers, the Caps losing song with the Cubs losing song that should never have happened in the first place.
It's a great song, and I'm very happy to hear it again. Tariq, welcome to our humble setup here at the Sections 106, 107 in the main concourse.
What's up, fellas?
How are you, buddy?
Thanks for the invite.
We are fired up to see you in person, see your smile and face. Let's start with the news of the day. Alexi Protas looks like he's full go. Is he going to play?
We will know for sure at warmups, but I think that things were trending this morning in the direction of Alexi Protas making his return. You know, as a reporter, the things you look for are, does he stay on the ice for extra work? To get some extra conditioning work that he wouldn't get because he's not playing in the game, or does he come off with the other players who are in the lineup? He came off with the other players who are in the lineup, and Taylor Radish, who typically plays, took the extra skate. So I do think that Protas is going to be in the lineup, and that is a huge, huge deal for the Caps.
Now, does that mean he's going to be on the fourth line? Does it mean he's going to be on the third line and someone else goes to the fourth line? Does it mean he's going to be on the first line and yes. someone else goes to another line? Where is he going to be?
Walton speculated Bevilier goes down to four and Protas plays the top line. But Bevilier, Stroman, Ovechkin have been
phenomenal.
It's been
fun.
It's been a very good line. It's been a productive line. In Montreal, they struggled a little defensively to handle the Suzuki line, but overall, they are a net positive. Now, that's always the question that coaches have to figure out when one player comes in and one player has to go out is, do I disrupt one line or do I disrupt a lot of lines by moving things around? With Radish likely coming out, the problem is you don't want to put Protas in the fourth line. He's just not a fourth line player.
Yeah, that's a no go.
Yeah, he is a first or second line player. So to me, I think you would put Beauvillier down on the fourth line and you would put Protas on the top line. But then you're breaking up a line that's had some production.
Yeah.
Here was my thought.
Okay.
I wanted to put him on the third line.
Okay.
And move Ryan Leonard down to the fourth line.
Okay.
So Mongeller, Protas.
Sure.
And then you would have Duhaime and Doughty were kind of inseparable.
Sure.
Doughy and Doughty. And then you've got Leonard going down. He only played 9 minutes last game.
Sure.
Whatever. That would be my thought. I know he's not a third-line guy, but it's a game. And I don't know what he's going to look like. He hasn't played in weeks.
Sure.
I'm expecting a, whatever, C-minus, D version. I don't know. Hopefully it's a B version of him. But the first game, does he have to be on the top line with Strome who's got a point in every game? I don't know.
That's a great point, and I know where you're going with this, and I don't disagree because it does take a little bit of time to get back into game shape and kind of feel the puck and get back to where he was 3 weeks ago. That said, I feel like if he's coming back in the lineup, they're pretty confident that he is close to 100%. They have been putting him through the ringer. I've been watching it for about a week. He's been ramping it up. He's been taking contact. He's been doing other things at full speed. I don't mind moving Leonard down and starting Protas on the third line. The beautiful thing about Protas is he can play anywhere, right? He can play on all four lines. He can play center if you need him to. He can do everything but defense and goalie. And he probably could play defense if you needed him.
I bet you could play goalie so big.
I'll tell you what, you look at the way goalies are trending in terms of size. I mean, you know, anything shorter than 6'5", and you're probably not getting a sniff at the top level.
Tarik Elbashir with us here live, Cap One Arena, Grant and Danny on the Fan. So here's my counter to the point that you made that was a counter to a different point.
Okay.
You follow that?
Yep.
You got last change.
Yep.
So I don't really care that much that Ovi, Strome, and Beauvillier couldn't handle that Caulfield-Suzuki line, which is excellent.
Sure.
Right? So I probably don't have to have them match up. So does that change any kind of thinking there with having maybe Protas go to that top line or not?
It absolutely does. I would say if Protas were returning in Montreal, I think you would put Protas on the first line in place of Beauvillier.
Because knowing they're going to try to target it.
Exactly.
Right.
But now you're putting a big body, you know, 6'6", 247 pounds, defensively responsible, got great wheels for a player of that size. But you're right. You do have a little more latitude when you're playing at home because you do own the last change. It's going to be really interesting to see how it plays out. But I will also say this. One of the most overrated things, I think, in hockey, particularly in pro hockey, are lines. I mean, I would say 3 out of every 10 games, the lines that started the game are completely scrambled by the end of the game.
Do you mean who's skating with who or exactly. The matchup against another line?
Who is skating with
who? That's what I thought you meant.
Yeah. Because and by the time you get to the end of the season, after 82 regular season games, everyone has played with everyone. Mm. So you are looking for your optimum lineup, but as a coach, you know, you're watching the guys. You're watching their body language. You're watching the matchups. If you see something that's not looking great, if one guy looks like he's maybe not at 10/10, he's a little off, you might want to switch things up. If it's second period and you've only got 9 shots, you might want to switch things up. To me, lines, you know, with a few exceptions, are the ones where, like, that line has, like, a nickname. You want to keep that together forever. Otherwise, I mean... chemistry something, but at the end of the year, once you get to the playoffs, everyone's comfortable with everyone else.
If you look at how they employed Protas this year and just the way that he was used, he was fourth in the NHL at 2.84 points per 60 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Fourth in the NHL.
Yeah.
Was one of the best even strength skaters Super in efficient. The sport. And then if you look at Caps forwards in terms of the penalty kill, where they really struggled, certainly in Montreal, tied for third on the team with Tom Wilson, average shorthanded ice time per game, about a minute 35. Where's he going to help them more? They've been really good at even strength. I think they have a 10-6 edge in the series. Penalty kill was a bit of an issue. Maybe that was because they were in Montreal. But Where would you expect he makes his biggest impact coming back here? He's seventh in the league in individual scoring chances per 60 on the penalty kill.
Well, he's going to play so much more at even strength. So I think the obvious answer is he's going to help more at even strength because 80% of his deployment is going to be at even strength. That said, the penalty kill has not been good, which is kind of inexplicable because that's actually the wrong word. It is explainable. And here's why, in my opinion. It was fifth in the league at the end of the regular season. You take Marty Farivari out. He was the leader on the team in shorthanded ice time. You take Alexi Protas out, and you're taking out one of your top penalty-killing forwards. And now, two big parts of your penalty kill are out, and you're asking other players to step in at this late stage of the season. And you couple that with a Canadiens power play that's got Cole Caulfield on the other side, what a trigger man he is, and Suzuki and all these other key players. The good thing is, Laine's been out, but that's a really, really dangerous power play. I want to say the Habs have scored 5 power play goals and had 2 just last game. So if the Caps are going to make a run, they got to figure that out because Farivari's not coming back this year. We know that.
Montembeau play tonight? No, right?
He's not even here.
He's not even on the ice still.
No.
What's his injury? Do you have any idea?
Yeah, so I was actually working the game for TNT in Montreal when he left, and game 3, it looked like it was a left leg injury of some sort because he actually walked right by me when he got hurt. Something happened in the game, left leg. He tried to play through it. 5 or 6 minutes later, he came over and said, "I can't do it anymore."
Wow.
He came out. And so I don't know if it's a hamstring or a knee or whatever, but it's somewhere between his thigh and his calf.
That's obviously Montreal's goalie for somebody listening who hadn't been paying that close of attention. And then Carrier, who Wilson destroyed and murderballed and ended the night of. Is he playing tonight?
He's a game time decision.
Okay. Line A might be back for them.
Line A is not playing tonight.
Wow. So they're super banged up.
They are banged up. They are banged up. And
it's almost like the much more physical Capitals have taken a toll on them in this series.
Which is always the point of building a team that's bigger and stronger than everyone else is, within games, you hope that if you invest physically in the first and second period, it pays dividends in the third period. What were the Capitals this year? They were the best team in the National Hockey League in the third period. If you invest in game 1 and game 2, physicality, you hope that in games 4, 5, and 6, if you get there, that the other team is literally broken down and you've broken their will and defensemen do not want to go behind the net and retrieve pucks because they know Tom Wilson is going to plaster them against the boards. And I do think you're starting to see some of that. Guys, I don't want to look too far ahead, but if they're able to get by the Habs tonight, they can beat Carolina. And just like that championship year, you can sort of see the pathway opening up a little bit for them.
Let's finish this one first.
Absolutely.
And I want to talk about that with you after.
So how important, Tark?
I've lived this too many years, Tark.
And that's where I was going to go. How important is it that they actually do it tonight? Because the instant, and sure, you're up 3 games to 2, don't you feel good? I'm from D.C., dude. I don't feel good until we're on to the next city, and they actually checked into the hotel.
So I think it's critical, and I'll tell you a couple of reasons. I feel like they chipped away at some of the belief the Habs had with that third period. In game 4, I feel like going into game 4, the Habs were like, down 2-1. We probably could have beat them in that first game. We're in this, boys. Mm-hmm. I think they kind of got housed a little bit there in the third period. They gave up 4 straight goals. 2 of them were empty netters, I know, but that was a very lopsided period. And I feel like just body language wise and listening to what they said after the game, I think the realization is starting to sink in that the Capitals might be the better team. And the Caps need to capitalize on that by having a strong first 10 minutes tonight. And the other reason is the Carolina Hurricanes, Sebastian Aho and company, they've had their feet up all day.
Yeah.
They've already got a day extra rest here. You can't have this go back to Montreal and now you're 3-4 days extra. I mean, if you don't win tonight, what if you have to go back to Montreal to finish them off and you suffer another injury up there? What if you suffer an injury, in game 7? Like you don't want to live your life by hypotheticals. That said, every time you go on the ice, the risk for suffering an injury to a key player is there.
Sure.
Wrap it up tonight, be healthy, take tomorrow off, practice Friday, get back at it Saturday or Sunday.
So we do this draft at the end of every pre-playoff show.
Okay.
Where we draft a Capitals player to score a goal.
Okay.
I am scuffling. just tough luck. I'm Lars Eller. I just can't put one in the net right now.
Okay.
I got one. Give me a sneaky pick for down the board because the obvious guys go up top. Mm-hmm. But give me a sneaky pick, pick to click tonight, who you think could score a goal.
Ryan Leonard. It's time for him to score, and I'll tell you why. Last game wasn't his best game. Only played a little less than 10 minutes. That said, his on-ice shooting percentage, when the five Capitals are on the ice, it's something like 2%. The team is shooting like 13%. You know what that tells me? That he's getting opportunities. They're just not going in. This is a silly game played on ice. You know, pucks hit the post and they go out. Pucks hit the post and they go in. Pucks hit skates. Referees make bad calls. All sorts of stuff has to happen. I think Ryan is due. I feel like he had some really good opportunities at the end of the regular season, those last few games he played, and he had some really good opportunities in games one and two. He is due.
Little kid Leno. I love it. Tarek, it is great to see you, buddy, I appreciate you making time for us at the arena.
Of course.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, you're busy.
Yeah.
Tarek El-Bashir, Monumental Sports. Check him out as he continues to cover the club tonight and throughout the postseason. We will have our Caps to Score a Goal draft, and we'll hit the leadoff ahead of Nats baseball after 6 o'clock before we get out of here. But next, what areas on the roster haven't the Commanders fixed? And we'll hit the headlines from here at Capital One Arena ahead of Game 5.
Anyone who loves playing baseball or softball knows that one of the first steps in that journey is breaking in your first glove. It's where your love of the game began. Where does your child's baseball or softball journey begin? Go to playball.org to get started. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sarah. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
With Danny, I'm Grant. This is The Fan. We're at Capital One Arena. Looks like they're just starting to let some of the VIPs in. I believe the gates officially open at 6 o'clock, 10 minutes from now. So if you're listening on the Odyssey app or you're listening on the road, we just had a listener come up who drove up from Fredericksburg today, was listening to the show all the way up, which is awesome. Come on by and say hello. Sections 106, 107 in the main concourse. Grant and Danny with you, taking you up to pregame.
Yeah, usually if you drive up from Fredericksburg, you can catch a lot of the show. You'll hear a lot of us in the on the old radio there.
He said an hour and 15 the commute.
We both went, wow, like that's amazing.
He made good time, I'll say, from Fredericksburg to D.C., parking door to door, getting into the arena in an hour and 15. I think you'll take that. Big news in D.C., and it has nothing to do with a RFK Stadium 2.0, although for fats like myself, it's equally as significant. You see Giordano's Pizza.
Oh, I saw it.
Could be coming to the nation's capital.
I saw it hardcore. Now, let me say something, if I may, and editorialize.
Oh, I know where this is going. There will be some besmirching.
There is far, far too much disrespect from all of you. That's right. I'm talking to you out there in Radio Land about deep dish pizza. It may not be your favorite kind of pizza, and that's fine. I'll allow that.
Overrated.
These people who are screaming about more bread, more cheese, more sauce, and more meat on your pizza, this is not your domain. Let us fat folk, let us heavy sets, let us portlies dine upon the joy that is that deep dish pizza. Oh, I'm sorry that crust is so hearty and a little bit sweet. I'm sorry about that fresh tomato sauce right on top. I'm sorry about all the meat that they are desperate to put on your pizza. Get out of the way because I'm going.
Deep dish is great.
Yes, it is.
All pizza is great.
Thank you, Grant.
We need to acknowledge that every pizza is a special, wonderful gift from the heavens.
Thank you.
But there's a little bit too much talking about deep dish pizza.
Oh, stop.
That's my stance.
Oh, my God.
Am I giddy about Giordano's coming to D.C.? Of course. Will I be there with bells on? Will I eat it? Yes. You're not hearing the right point. It's just the over-talking about it.
Well, the over-talking about it is in direct response to these villains that want to take it from us. They only got Scott's New York pizza. First of all, wrong.
Those people are the response to the over-talkers about the deep dish
pizza. Oh, you stop it.
Danny, you know
who's at fault here.
You can either only eat New York pizza or Chicago pizza for the rest of your life.
Why don't you maybe pick one of my kids? I'm not doing that.
Pick?
No, I refuse to play your game. I'm turning away from you.
You know why? Because you know the answer.
I don't know the answer. I love whatever I've had most recently.
The superior pizza is not the Chicago deep dish.
Listen.
By the way, you know what you sleep on comfortably is Detroit style.
I'm sure we don't get Detroit style from Jets Pizza all the time.
You don't locally eat or enjoy Detroit pizza, and that's your problem.
An insane comment to make to me.
All pizzas are good. What I'm saying is Chicago is down the pecking order. It's down the depth chart.
It doesn't go very far down, is what I'm telling you. And it's the and if I can say this respectfully, it's the people like you that make the rest of us have to start swinging our swords about Chicago pizza.
Okay, well, stand on. No. I'm the one saying nice things about Chicago pizza.
You just said it's down the list.
It is. Take a stance. Is it better than New York?
It's not better.
Is it better than Detroit?
Yeah.
Oh, stop. But by the way, by answering that, you're acknowledging that you don't think it's better than New York.
It's different.
It's also different than Detroit.
Of course it is, but I prefer it to Detroit. But you're saying is Chicago style better or New York style better is like saying, I don't know, what's a better video game, a first-person shooter or a narrative-driven story? I think it depends on what you're in the mood for. It depends on what you're looking for. They're totally different things. It's only pizza because it's meat, bread, cheese, and sauce.
I'm happy to eat it. If they want to open this restaurant, I'll be there, and on opening night, I'll pummel it. I once, by the way, ordered a Giordano's pizza, true story, to my hotel covering a Redskins-Bears game years and years ago, probably 2011 in Chicago. I had no idea how big and thick the pizza was. I'd had it. It had been a few years. Mm-hmm. It came to my hotel. It felt like there was a cinder block in the box.
Oh, that's the greatest feeling.
I opened it up. I was starving. I thought, I'm going to eat five of these. I ate one piece. It was giant.
Yep.
It was heavier than a brick. I ate it, and I had to leave the rest in my hotel room because I was going to the airport at 4 a.m. the next morning. Mm-hmm. It was, and I'm not exaggerating, by the way, with the delivery and the tip and everything. I think it was like $50.
And you're going, why is that so overpriced? Oh, now I get it. Because a slice is enough. Can I tell you one of my all-time fattest behaviors?
Sure.
It was actually not Giordano's, it was Lou Malnati's. But I ate the four-person pizza with Brendan Dar by myself.
Oh, wow. That's a win.
So do you want to order one pizza? And Sharon, I go, no, I don't want to share. I want to get my own. And he's like, you thinking for some later? And I was like, yeah, it's for later. And I ate this is for four people pizza by myself. And I've never felt worse, but I've also never been happier.
It's a win for DC.
Yeah.
We should have brought that up with the council.
There we go. It's Council Member Pinto. How excited are you about this?
How do we get more of the restaurants that we really, really want? That's a victory, but everyone just needs to calm down.
Oh,
that's my stance.
No. Celebrate.
We got our Caps to score a goal tonight draft coming up on Grant and Danny. Who do we got lighting the lamp? And the Nats leadoff before we get out of here. We're at Capital One Arena taking you up to pregame, a monster game five tonight. Will the Caps clinch a series at home for the first time in 10 years? This is The Fan.